I was just reminded of this in Luke 2:10. Listen what the angels said to some shepherds, people that could fit in, I think, in many ways with Appalachians, normal people working the swing shift down at the steel plant. Don't be afraid, for look, I proclaim to you good news of great joy that will be for all people.
From Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute, this is the Level Paths Podcast. We're glad you've taken some time to join us. My name is Chris Weigel. It's Christmas time, and we can't talk about Christmas without traditions. And on this episode of the Level Paths Podcast, Christmas traditions in Appalachia. Dr. Jacob Marshall, the pastor of Antioch Baptist Church in Ono, West Virginia, is joining Rex Howe and remembering what Christmas in Appalachia looks like. It's everything from shotguns to giant apples in brown paper bags. Here's Rex.
Welcome back to another Level Paths podcast. This is our Christmas edition on the Level Paths podcast. We always think of Isaiah 40, Mark chapter 1. We think of the way of the Lord being prepared. In that context, a highway is being made. The idea of a level, straight, clear path being made. Why? So that all people can behold the glory of God. And particularly in Mark, the glory of Jesus Christ, the incarnate Son of God. And as we come to the Christmas season, he's the one that this is all about. We're happy here at Tri-State Bible College to enjoy another season of the Level Pass podcast, and we want to point you to a special resource that our faculty has worked on this Advent season. Several of our faculty wrote devotionals for this Christmas season, and you can find those on our website for free at tsbc.edu. Just go there, scroll down a little bit, you'll see recent posts, and you'll see the 2024 Christmas Advent devotional from our faculty here. Some great writings, good things to think about with your family, with your loved ones this Christmas season. As we get into this episode, I have not my usual partner in crime, Dr. Matt Shamblin, but one of my other definitely partner. We've been partners in crime for a long time, Dr. Jacob Marshall.
Merry Christmas, Rex. Yeah, it's criminal. It's criminal what we do, I think.
Well, brother, we are here to talk about Christmas traditions in Appalachia, and particularly things that might happen on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve into Christmas Day, and sort of a lighthearted conversation here with one another about things that happen in Appalachia around the Christmas Advent season. But before we get to that, let's start with one of the earliest messages that was given on and around the Advent season. This comes from the year 386 in Syrian Antioch. We know Syria is a place of trouble right now in our time. We have brothers and sisters over there for whom we need to pray, and may the Lord encourage them and help them to keep the faith during their fears over there as they live in a time of trouble. But this sermon was proclaimed by John Chrysostom, was a well-known preacher in the early church, and he had this to say: "What shall I say, and how shall I describe this birth to you? For this wonder fills me with astonishment. The Ancient of Days has become an infant. He who sits upon the sublime and heavenly throne now lies in a manger. And he who cannot be touched, who is simple, without complexity, and incorporeal, now lies subject to the hands of men. He who has broken the bonds of sinners is now bound by an infant's bands. But he has decreed that ignominy shall become honor, infamy be clothed with glory, and total humiliation the measure of his goodness. For this he assumed my body, that I may become capable of his word. Taking my flesh, he gives me his spirit. And so he bestowing and I receiving, he prepares for me the treasure of life. He takes my flesh to sanctify me. He gives me his spirit, that he may save me." And there's more to it, but just an opening there. The wonder of the incarnation stimulates joy, it stimulates worship. There's no other story like it, Jacob.
I think of Chuck Swindoll. He used to always tell us in chapel, he would come in and he'd say, "Guys, pause and just let the wonder in. Don't be so enmeshed in all of the getting the events of Christmas done, or being, you know, getting the message finished or getting the music put together, don't forget to just stop and go, wow, God, who is like you? Who is like you? Praise God. Just a good word, Rex.
Yeah, Dr. Phillips around here, he'll say, let the scriptures breathe a little bit. So we've got a big list here, brother, of Christmas Eve or Christmas time traditions in Appalachia that we're just going to work through and comment on and see if we remember these or if we can relate to these or if our grandparents maybe told us about these things. So the first on my list is Old Christmas. This goes all the way back to the 1500s when Pope Gregory the 13th moved the calendar from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, and Christmas moved from January 6th to December 25th. And as I was reading up on this, because it's an Appalachian tradition, and I'll tell you why in a second, but the English and the Scots really resisted this change. And I think it was in the 1700s that they finally embraced it. And then coming over to the Americas, it was even slower, and particularly in Appalachia, it was slower. Not necessarily because there was a lot of resistance, but because we just didn't know that the date has changed. There's a tradition not too terribly long ago, really the 1800s, where people were still practicing Christmas on January 6th. Now, the interesting thing, did your family tend to leave lights up long past Christmas?
We did. We kept them up not too long. We weren't, you people know who you are that keep them up year long. No, we ridiculed those people, Rex. Listen, we weren't Pharisees, but Christmas light people, I don't want to get legalistic here, but they need to be down by January the 1st, or at least around that. If they're still up in February, you're probably going to need to talk to your pastor.
What about January 6th? Once Appalachians finally got the word that, hey, Christmas has changed, it's December 25th now, some people started leaving their lights up at least until January 6th because they kind of were remembering the 11 days and they would leave them up for Old Christmas, which I've always wondered, why do people around here leave their lights up so long? And I just wonder if that's why.
It's a good excuse. I would take that. I'd count that. That was good. When you said Old Christmas, I was a little more, I thought, how are we talking about like the Waltons Christmas special here? That's what I think of Old Christmas in Appalachia. It's something like this, but this is way back.
So the next one, candles in the window.
We didn't have the real ones. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody with real. I'm not sure when this started, but we all, you know, we all had those little plastic candles or a little group of three candles that you had, and that was just a staple. I don't really know why we did it, but there were always some little candles in each one of our house's windows.
Same thing, the plastic ones, checking the batteries each year. My grandparents had candles in the windows. I don't know that it was ever connected to any reason other than just normal Christmas decorating, but as I was reading, it goes back to a sign of welcome to your house. So if you had the candle lights lit, then it was a sign to visitors, neighbors, guests that you were open. People could come in, they could get some cider, they could get some baked goods and a visit. That's what I heard about candles in the window. All right, going to see Christmas lights.
This was a yearly tradition in our house. I think many people do it. And we would go to, I remember going to Stanford Park in Huntington, is where we used to go. My dad was a Huntington firefighter, so we go to some of these nice subdivisions and I just remember being a kid thinking, oh, wow, this is amazing. So that was pretty regular. It was a special night to be like, hop in the car and go look at Christmas lights.
We did that too. I definitely remember planned time. On this day, this night, we are going to bundle up and we're going to go drive for a while and we're going to go to these neighborhoods and look at the Christmas lights. Ashland Park, that was a common place we would go. Besides the neighborhoods around Wheelersburg that we would go to, it was almost like there was this feeling associated with seeing the lights in the midst of the darkness. And I don't know how to describe it exactly. You know what I'm talking about? There was this sort of feeling, being with the family, seeing the light in the darkness.
You know, it was just magical as a kid. There was warmness to it. I think I look back and there were so many things that there's so much good, so much neat from it, things that I enjoyed, but sometimes it was often just disconnected from, why does this click with my heart? From a kid to an older adult, Why are things that are so deeply good, you know, Aslan will call it the deep magic in Narnia. Why is there certain things that reverberate even if as a toddler to a teen to an adult?
Now, this one's a little strange, Jacob. I tried to track down the origin story, but there are numerous origin stories to this myth or belief or whatever we may call this. And I had not heard this from any of my relatives. My grandma would have been the carrier of this had there been such a belief in her family. But animals talking at midnight on Christmas Eve, have you ever heard anyone talking about that?
No, I haven't. This one's new to me.
Many lists of Appalachian Christmas traditions have this listed. I just don't know much about it, so I would love to hear more. Now, the next one, I have experience with this one, but I don't know that I have experience with the original way in which this went. We call it caroling, getting together. A lot of times, like our church in Minford, Ohio, we would get together, we'd go caroling at the shut-ins' houses, we would take some gifts, we would sing some Christmas carols and hymns in their lawn, and a lot of times they would invite us in with some baked goods or something. Okay, before I go into the older history of it, do you have memories of that?
This was common for us. When I grew up at church, we'd go caroling. I remember getting pulled around in a wagon, a tractor pulling us around to some neighborhood places one year. Yeah, going around and caroling to people in our church, but also some people, too, that we just knew were community members who might need a little bit of extra encouragement that season that were older. This is a definite one that we still kind of do, even that my kids and I have done a few times with our church now.
I actually think this is an excellent ministry today. I think this is something that is a good outreach activity. There are so many elderly in Appalachia. It's a way for us to love them, members of our church or otherwise. I also think what you said about people maybe who are just in a rough spot, this is something that can really brighten someone's day. That you would think of them, that you'd bring, you know, songs oftentimes encourage people, and especially if you bring some baked goods and just contact with people who are struggling. I think this is a great, great tradition that shouldn't be lost.
Yeah, we had like a whole Christmas card collection as we got close to Christmas too. Did your church have a Christmas card culture? Ours growing up did, and I've done that a few times since. It's kind of passed or faded away, but a few times I've sent some handwritten Christmas cards to people. It's been another way. Maybe you're not a singer or you're not a caroler. You don't have a group of people. But a handwritten Christmas card, especially to an older person in Appalachia, it might open up a really special conversation.
That's a special thing. It's not done a lot today. Now, what we do as a family, when we get Christmas cards from folks, these days we get them from people in the tri-state, but we also get them from Texas and Illinois, probably like you and Sam do, We keep them. And then after Christmas, we pray for the cards. So we'll get them out at dinner. We'll get two or three out and we'll take turns praying for the cards until we get all the way through them. So it's a way for us to really connect with people across the country that we haven't seen in a bit and keep them in our prayers and maybe even reach out to them, actually, because, oh, we haven't talked to so-and-so in so long. We prayed for them. We're going to reach out and follow up, see how they're doing. But back to caroling. In Appalachia, apparently there used to be this tradition called serenading. So you notice the word serene is in serenade. Well, there's nothing serene about this tradition at all. It's completely like an Appalachian prank. And so, you know, Appalachian people love to pull pranks. I don't know if people know that about us, but we love jokes and practical jokes, all this stuff. So groups would get together Christmas Eve night and they would sneak on the lawn of somebody's house and they would take all manner of noise with them. I'm talking like pots and spoons, shotguns, anything that is loud and obnoxious. And they would just make a ruckus. It wasn't really singing. It was serenading. So they would just make a ruckus, and then the homeowner, they were expected to come out, you know, get a laugh and then invite them in for cider and baked goods, you know. So that's what happened. Now, if you got caught coming up to the lawn, then the owner would shoot a shotgun sign in the air and let you know that you've been busted, but then they would still invite you in for cookies and cider. So that's serenading.
That sounds like our people right there.
Sounds like our people. That's right. So a lot of baking happens at Christmas time. We love, as a family, getting the kids involved, making all kinds of cookies, all kinds of candy, fudge. But the thing that is part of the tradition is taking these things to people, so family or neighbors. Did your family do that? And do you do that today?
We do it today. My wife's family did that. There is, I'm sure your family has, there's like this recipe, it was hard, but it rolled out around Christmas time, took a little extra effort. But there were people that were waiting. You know, it was like, oh, these are the cookies. So they were a little special. We'd do some bags, and I know my wife does that still. And we deliver some things in there. It's just something special. It's a nice little treat.
That also reminds me of the family cookbooks. I mean, I use my family's cookbook throughout the year, but there's a Christmas section. These are the go-to Christmas cookie recipes. And those have been passed down from generations.
When it's Christmas time, Nanny has to make her applesauce cake. That's an old Appalachian cake. A lot of Appalachians know what an applesauce cake is, and that's coming out at Christmas.
I've heard of them, never tasted one. I'm going to have to get on that. I've not had the applesauce cake before. All right, so sticking with the food trend, fruit baskets for widows in the church or in the community, and fruit bags at the church service that was associated with the Christmas celebration. So in our fruit bags at Ohio Furnace Baptist Church growing up as a kid, we had brown paper bags and peanuts in the bottom, shelled peanuts, and then orange and or an apple. Later, pastor and the deacon slipped in a Snickers bar later on. Now, that wasn't how it was originally, but later as I got older, that started to happen. What about you?
It's similar. I remember showing up Christmas morning at Valley of Decision out in Salt Rock. We were going to do like our Sunday school gift exchange. You were going to get it that morning. And then as we were going out, you're going to get a beautiful, I just remember being a kid seeing, how could that red delicious apple look any more red than that? Like, wow. I was like, I don't know why, but we should do this more often. This is pretty cool. But there's an old tradition of think of the special treat that fresh fruit would have been in the winter months of Appalachia that kind of comes out of fruit making its way across the mountains into hard to reach places. You talk about a special gift in winter, it would have been the taste of fruit.
I did always wonder how they got such enormous apples and oranges. I mean, those things were big. Now, let me ask you this. Moving to some things that happened at church, other than the fruit bags, we always had a children's program.
I think it depended on your congregation, but it's not uncommon at all out in a place, especially where people want to celebrate Christmas. And when you didn't have all these options that we have today, we were the original, the chosen, Rex. I mean, but it was a lot lower budget. I would say a lot, maybe less quality, but it was fun. You'd show up, but there'd be a guy out there that he's a contractor. He got scammed into being a shepherd up there and, you know, was saying a line. It was fun and special to see men and women, old and young, in the church, whether it be our church was not a live nativity church. There's some that do that's a big deal for them. But you kind of saw these people in different roles coming up and just, you know, a lot of laughs. We would be people that are not used to doing this, but it was special memories as a kid growing up and experiencing this.
I don't know about you, but we just had our children's program at Wheelersburg Baptist Church packed. So many people come to these programs. It's just an easy opportunity to share the gospel, isn't it?
I agree. Our children's Christmas play that we do is maybe our second most well-attended service of the year behind Easter, especially in the amount of people that are new into the circle of our church. That just gives us a wonderful reason to invite somebody. I think it's easy for everybody in Appalachia, Rex. We love kids. It's one of the best parts about growing up here. We have this affinity for kids and for being childlike, you know, to kind of playing. We have this love of play. If you can do it, and again, doesn't have to be perfect, but that the evening kind of strikes that chord of we value kids because we value Jesus. Do you know him? Do you know why that connection exists? It's really powerful. It's a great opportunity in many of our communities.
Now we're getting into some just random things here, other things we had on our list. So Was it tradition for you that the older folks stay home and the younger folks are expected to travel to them? Was that the case for you?
Yeah, for the most part. There was a lot of traveling, I felt like, as a young kid, you know, a young family. You were going to everything. We had Gino's Pizza so many nights, you know, that for New Year's Eve, that, you know, it was just special. You knew it. Well, at Papa Morris's, we're getting Gino's. Well, at this one, we're getting, you know, this type of pizza. And so it was fun. We did a lot of traveling going to houses.
We always went to my grandparents' house for Christmas Eve. It didn't matter how big the family got. It didn't matter how small the basement was at my grandparents' house, which is where we all gathered. It didn't matter how hot it got in that basement. We still traveled, and that's where it was hosted. What was so interesting about that is I have memories of sort of watching people grow up based on that Christmas Eve gathering, watching my cousins grow up, both in sad ways and in joyous ways, watching the family change. A marriage happened, but then a divorce might have happened. And how that changed over the years, it was pictured in that Christmas Eve gathering. It's like all of our joys and our sorrows came together in that night. Do we realize that Jesus is at the center of all this? And what he came to do and what he accomplished is at the center of it. Now, to talk about who's center of Christmas, to Santa or not to Santa, Jacob, that's the question.
Well, you know, we grew up in a house that we were watching Santa Claus Comes to Town and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I know people, I'm not going to mention names in my family, but he is referred to as the Satan Claus, you know, of the... Strong opinions. I think of my wife, they didn't celebrate Santa, really do anything. And she's in the store one day and this lady comes up and goes, "Well, little girl, what's Santa going to bring you for Christmas?" And Sam, the story's told every Christmas. She looks at this woman just in this glare and she goes, "Nothing." To which, to the horror of my mother-in-law and this lady, kind of like, "You're the worst parent," you know, just kind of gives her this stink eye and moves on. So another characteristic of Appalachia, there's going to be opinions, but whatever side you're on, they're going to be strongly held opinions.
As a parent myself, and as a Christian, you want to make sure that Christ is at the center. And one of the things that may be worth its weight in gold that my seminary studies gave me is that St. Nicholas of Myra was a real person, Jacob.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'm going to take a historical critical approach to this question. So we're going to talk about Santa in his historical context, Amy. That's what we're going to do. Yes. So I found ways to sort of straddle the fence, if you will, on the Santa question with the story of St. Nicholas and how he loved Jesus and he was a really, really faithful Christian man, but definitely some household discussions go on around Santa Claus. I don't know how many people know about St. Nicholas of Myra, but if you don't know about him, he's worth reading about.
I did a fun little message one time called The Recipe for St. Nick's Famous Christmas Punch. So I'll leave you to unpack that. There's a little bit of a fun story about him that he was actually very grieved over later. He actually was, you know, I overreacted, but there was somebody, a famous voice at that time was saying, you know, "Hey, you guys are getting Jesus wrong." And it worked St. Nick up so much that he stood up and did something about it, kind of boxed the guy on the ears a little bit in a church council.
And St. Nick was right, by the way.
Yes, he was. Right.
To continue in our this or that, eggnog or not to eggnog, Jacob, what do you think?
There's strong feelings about this, Rex. I am an eggnog snob. My dad and I, we were passing this tradition on, but it may die with me, Rex. Currently, there is no one in the Marshall household except my wife, who I think only does it to just tolerate me. But there's no one in the Marshall household who would probably say eggnog is anything less than disgusting. But I think it's one of my favorite holiday traditions of the year.
Yeah, I'm going to have to side with your wife on that one, brother. Now, my wife is with you. She likes eggnog. They always have eggnog in their family. We didn't have eggnog in our family growing up. You know, to me, if all of it was dumped out in the ocean, I'd be fine with it. All right, before it gets too hostile, let's go on to favorite movies, Jacob. Let's go on to favorite movies. So I got a lot of favorite Christmas movies. There's some new ones that have come out. Like Christmas with the Cranks. By the way, that's a great book by John Grisham. It's called Skipping Christmas is the book, but the movie's The movie's good. The Christmas Chronicles with Kurt Russell, those are kind of fun and new. They've got this new one out with The Rock, right? Red One. But for me, Home Alone, man. My dad was a prankster. I like a good prank when it doesn't happen to me. Marv taking the bricks to the face in Home Alone 2. I mean, I just find it hysterical. So Home Alone is classic for us. What about your family?
Our favorite movie that we're going to watch multiple times leading up, we've got to see The Muppets Christmas Carol. We know the songs, we look forward to watching The Muppets Christmas Carol together.
One that was my favorite, but it's kind of changed with my kids, was The Christmas Story. The Christmas Story with Ralphie and Randy and those guys. That was one of my favorite, but my kids haven't grasped onto it like I thought they would, but Home Alone is definitely the one that's like the family favorite at this time.
Dad will want to watch It's a Wonderful Life, you know, as we get close. It's a good movie. Every time I think of that movie, I think of my dad. So it's special.
All right. Now, reading The Christmas Story. In tradition, in Appalachia, it's been the patriarch of the family who kind of reads the Christmas story. That changed over time to where even the kids kind of took over reading the Christmas story in some families, some households. How do you guys read the Christmas story in your home?
I grew up in a fairly normal home, and we didn't. Not that we grew up going to church, but my parents, my dad was saved from, you know, just a home that was not really a really strong Christian background. But we didn't read it. And then I get married, and I go over to Sam's house. And this is the best thing I've ever seen. So they're gathering around, and Rick, her father, comes. Everybody gets quiet, and he's got it memorized because he's just done it so many years. And so he just starts into Luke 2 and shares it. And so just to have that is so special. I remember being in Dallas, Texas. Sam and I was our first year. We were down there at seminary. We're celebrating Christmas by ourselves. And he sends us a card with a recording of him reading the Christmas story to us. And we just kept opening that and opening that and opening that over and over all Christmas season and just going, Lord, thank you for family. But like you know, Rex, there's that special promise that he's turning the hearts of the fathers to the children's hearts back to the fathers. Jesus is good, Rex, even in these traditions and Christmas stories. So that's something we've kept doing and even emphasized even more. Presence was our big moment, that the wake up. And it was cool. It was fun. There's nothing wrong with it. But now I think my favorite part, we read the Christmas story. Denise makes a birthday cake. We light a candle. And everybody, the kids' part that we do, we all sing happy birthday to Jesus. We blow out the candle, and we have birthday cake together to end our Christmas time.
When we were in Illinois, we were part of a church that for 150-some years of their history was Norwegian Lutheran. Today, and in recent history, they're just an interdenominational church. Christmas was a big deal in the best way there. Really gospel-centered, really worshipful services. Christmas Eve is etched in my memory in that church. And everything from the way the church looked to the people to the service, it's just a wonderful, wonderful time there. One of the things we practiced throughout Advent there were the Advent candles. I remember my first year as pastor there, I had never celebrated with the Advent candles before. So I had to learn what each candle meant and scriptures associated with each candle. And then I get in and find out that different traditions call candles different things. So I'm like, okay, which one do I pick here? So I had some deacons that helped me out with that. But before we left to move back to Ohio, I purchased a set of Advent candles. And so we spent the first Sunday of Advent through Christmas Eve. We kind of prepare. Each Sunday we do a little devotional. One of the kids lights a different candle. It's a really biblically centered practice. I mean, we read certain scriptures. We talk about the different characters who are involved in the leading up to the Christmas story. So Christmas Eve night, we light the final candle in the Advent candle. I'll leave it to you guys to figure out what that candle is. I'm not going to go into that here. But then Christmas morning, we wake up, and the very first thing we do is we move the nativity set from its usual place to the dining room table. The kids are in charge of moving the characters into place as I read from Luke chapter 2. So as I read, then the kids got to move all the characters into place as they come up in the story. And then we do our final prayer for Advent. and then we eat, and then we open presents. But it's a great time as a family. All right, brother. So one of the things we're talking about is Christmas being one of the best times to talk to others about Jesus. It is one of those times where I think still, especially maybe not in the whole country, but at least in Appalachia, there's something that still opens the heart to God this time of year. There's sort of almost a willingness to consider.
Definitely. There are things that we grow callous to, you know, the busyness of life and all of these things. Now, there's still grief and suffering in Christmas. Yeah. Boom, this intrudes. The Christmas story even has that. You know, as we read, it's not far before you look and a messed up world starts unfolding again. I think in the best sense of that word, there's something magical about Christmas because it's tied to the true and living God. It's tied to this event that occurs that Jesus takes on flesh, the incarnation. I was in with some guys this past week and was just reminded of this in Luke 2:10. And just listen to this. Listen what the angels said to some shepherds, people that could fit in, I think, in many ways with Appalachians, normal people working the swing shift down at the steel plant. Don't be afraid, for look, I proclaim to you good news. It's fundamentally good news of great joy that will be for all people. That includes us. That includes Appalachians. He came for us and for our salvation. Everything we've talked about, there's all of these special things that happen at Christmas. But Rex, as you and I have mentioned, there's something special. We're breathing this Christmas air. Why are people belly laughing? Why is there joy? What motivates this generosity? There's a much better script and story than just, well, this is just some cultural tradition that we do. It's birthed out of this God who sends his son. It's the greatest thing that changes history. For us as parents, as neighbors, pastors, Sunday school teachers, vocational workers down at the steel plant, being a nurse out on the floor, for us to just realize and go, let's enjoy the Lord, let's delight in him, but let's also look for intentional opportunities and moments to make a bridge. And maybe that's shepherding some believers in our lives, and maybe that's shepherding some unbelievers in our lives towards Jesus, and just going, I want to invite you in on this. I can't contain it. I want you to know the Christ of Christmas.
It's still true today what John said in chapter 1 of his gospel. There's a light that shines in the darkness, and that light is the life of men. We need that light today. You can have it today, and God is a God who loves to give if only you'll receive it. We wish all of our supporters and listeners a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Appalachians take traditions pretty seriously, and if something has been done this way, then that's how we're going to do it. And it's especially true at Christmas. But like Rex said, no matter what the tradition, Christmas is still the celebration of God the Son coming to earth and becoming the sacrifice and payment for our sins. Everyone at Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute hopes and prays that Jesus is the center of your Christmas this year. Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute exist as a resource, and no matter what need you may have, Rex Howe and Dr. Matt Shamlin want you to reach out to them today. Rex Howe is the president of Tri-State Bible College. You can contact him by email at rex.howe@tsbc.edu, and you can reach out to Dr. Matt Shamlin at the Appalachian Ministry Institute by email, matt.shamlin@tsbc.edu. The Level Paths podcast is an outreach of Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute.